Welcome to La Liga Weekly. These are challenging times for everybody at the moment, so can I make one appeal? Can we all pull together and do everything we can to get Luis Suarez and Diego Costa playing on the same team at the same time? Come on, Atleti, you can do it. Get back to the days when a player's worth was measured by the strength of character and the size of his testicles. Maybe go for Raul Garcia in January. On the subject of understrength cojones, Alvaro Morata is on his way out. Don't worry, it looks like he's going to be picked up by Juventus. He's like one of those politicians who keep failing and keep getting a better job every time. Jaime Mata must look at Morata and wonder what he's done wrong. So while we all wait for news of the centre-forward merry-go-round, it seems as though Nelson Semedo will finally achieve his lifelong dream of living in Wolverhampton. Barcelona have been linked with Max Ahrens as a replacement. Yes, Max Ahrens of Championship side Norwich City. We are one Messi contract extension away from Barca having to sign players from Swindon Town to play alongside him. He is the greatest ever, but the clue that he might be overpaid is that the club can only afford 10 other players to play with him. Anyway, there was some action on the pitch this weekend, and 14 goals. Granada atop of La Liga, leading from Betis, obviously. Everyone's tipped for the bottom, Elche are currently unbeaten and outside of the relegation places. Above Levante, Alaves and Athletic on goal difference. Brilliant lads, well played. The much-anticipated match of the round finished. Real Sociedad 0, Real Madrid 0. If only David Silva was up to the speed of La Liga. Can't dwell on the ball in this league, mate. Obviously, I tried to get Tim Sherwood on the podcast this week, but he has no idea how you could possibly judge whether any players in La Liga are any good. They should have thought of televising. If only they thought of that in Spain. But I've got Terry instead. So Terry Gibson is here, of course, La Liga specialist who has watched all of the games, compiled detailed reports on all of the players. And Terry, you've written a lot of reports this week on a lot of very old players scoring goals. It is Dad's army, La Liga, at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, Aspas with his two goals were wonderful goals against Valencia. Yeah, no, you're right. But I guess we have to take into consideration as well, don't we, that certain teams haven't started yet. So 7 games this weekend, 7 the week before. We've still to see, of course, Barcelona, Atletico, Sevilla. The opponents have been missing games as well. Elche, we haven't seen yet because of the play that they got through via the playoffs and had to have a certain amount of time off. So I think it's been a nice, gentle introduction. And it's going to be interesting to see who benefits from, you know, when we saw at the weekend, didn't we? Real Sociedad already having played a game, playing Real Madrid. And I think you could kind of see that Real Madrid hadn't played too many pre-season friendlies and it was their first game in the season. And Real Sociedad still missing players through injury and coronavirus. So it's been a disjointed start, but I'm still, you know, glad to see it back. I thought it was some decent games at the weekend, although, as I say, admittedly not the superstars yet of the big teams.
And I think very much a trend is that the goals that we did get were very good goals as a rule. So you sort of have to work hard for your goals in La Liga at the moment. Not in every case, obviously. Negredo's was a bit of a soft one. So where shall we start? I think we normally obviously start with the Giants, but I don't think there's much of a case, to be honest, for starting with a 0-0 draw with Real Madrid. Shall we go Villarreal versus Eibar first? So Villarreal got a win there first under Unai Emery, but they had to come from behind. And Gerard Moreno, with a superbly taken goal, got them level. Paco Alcácer then squeezed in a winner.
Yeah, do you know what? It's a theme this weekend because I did a piece last week, did a programme for La Liga TV with Gus Poyet and Graham Hunter via Skype. Gus Poyet was in London on Skype. And Gus complained, and I couldn't have agreed more, about how many goals are conceded by teams unnecessarily playing out the back. And this is a general theme, and I think that we were discussing the week before, and I think there was half a dozen goals conceded by teams playing out the back, inaccurate passes, teams pressing relatively high and going on to score a goal. And I couldn't agree more. I think, you know, play out the back when it's on. And I get a feeling now when I watch a Premier League game in particular that every game looks pretty much the same. Every team's doing it. It's almost, you're obligated to pass, play out the back from the goalkeeper. When I watched Spanish football over the weekend, that didn't cross my mind. It was, every game was different. You know, some were good, some were bad. I'm not saying all the games were good, but there was a balance to it in terms of not every team in La Liga plays out the back. You know, we have quite a few teams that are direct, but at the weekend I didn't notice it. And in this particular game, I thought that, you know, the two centre backs of VRL good at bringing the ball out, but they don't overdo it. Eibar, of course, are pretty direct, and they had a plan, Eibar, and they shut down VRL for long periods. Some foolish attacking play from VRL, particularly Alcacer and Samuel Chukwueze, in terms of beating an offside trap that was obviously set up by Eibar. But ironically, in the end, the goal, the winning goal from Alcacer, come from him. It had to be reviewed on VAR because it was a close offside call. But it, ironically, in playing on the shoulder of the last defender against a high line defence, enabled him to get the winning goal for VRL. They just about deserved it. I don't think there would be an argument if Eibar had got a point. But it's tough going at the moment for VRL. I must admit, they're not impressive, to be honest.
To nail down this point about the playing styles, obviously, I don't know whether if people don't watch the Premier League, then Kepa Arrizabalaga, the Chelsea goalkeeper, who was obviously a Spanish international, a Basque, was caught in possession by Sadio Mane, who then had a tap-in. And I agree, just about. There's certainly, I think every coach who wants to look up with it, up on trend, does have his team playing literally back in their own penalty area and then trying to play out. And that, obviously, I think that came from Spain. I know it sort of developed in Germany as well, but the likes of Paco Gemes, Juanma Leo, and all of that kind of, and then obviously Pep Guardiola took it on board much more successfully at a higher level with better players. So is it fair to characterise it that even though that style came from Spain, that Spanish clubs are a little bit more flexible and aren't as sort of using that as slavishly, and therefore we're not necessarily seeing the same amount of recurrent mistakes playing that way?
Yeah, and also I think, and I've always said this, and regular listeners on the podcast, I always think Spain's a step ahead of the tactical systems. You know, the 4-2-3-1 is the greatest example. When I first went out to Spain in 2004, half the division were playing that system. I'd never seen it in England. Mm. And then when I was doing my scouting reports, then it took some explaining to tell people that, you know, there's four lines of players as opposed to three. And there's two, a double pivot in midfield. Then you've got three attacking midfielders. So essentially you've got defending midfielders and attacking midfielders, as opposed to traditional box-to-box midfielders are expected to defend and attack. There was a position called media punta, which is the number 10 position. And it took some explaining to people in England and the people I was working with. And eventually that kicked on. Rafa Benitez was the first at Liverpool to do it with his Spanish background. And then teams followed suit. And I kind of feel now that when I tell people in that a lot of teams in Spain are playing 4-4-2, people look at me with disbelief, you know, in because it's that, you know, that's out, you know, outdated. It's old fashioned. But a lot of the teams in La Liga play 4-4-2. And that's why I explain them. We're probably all we're preaching to those who are already converted, aren't we? In terms of, if you're listening to this podcast, you are interested and you've got a background knowledgeable about Spanish football. But I really do, you know, think it's what's pleasant about the league is the different styles of teams. And it's not just all about 4-3-3, 4-2-3-1. It's not every team playing out the back. It's, you know, so it does make, when you watch it on a weekly basis or game by game basis, as I'm doing currently, the games are different, you know. And as I said, I'm not dressing it up. Not every game was good. There was a particularly, you know, there's always some games that lack quality or the styles clash or stuff like that. But you do tend to see a variation of tactics from teams and styles of play. And in this game, Villarreal and Eibar, it made for a decent game, to be honest. It was lots of goal-scoring opportunities. Eibar had a plan, and Villarreal had two strikers that were the difference in Gerard Moreno and Paco Alcacer. So it's I think the tactical systems in Spain at this moment in time, with good coaches as well, lend itself to watching a different type of football in every game that you see. Whereas in the Premier League, I think it all looks pretty similar now.
Give us the case for 4-4-2, and what have you got to do to make it work, and who's making it work in La Liga?
But I think what you have to do, we have to accept the 4-4-2 now is different to the 4-4-2 that I played, because our fullbacks in a 4-4-2. Now, I played for 15 years and barely played in anything other than a 4-4-2 and against the 4-4-2. And everything was up and down in straight lines. So the reason I hated playing on the wing, which happens quite a bit in my career, was I was up and down in a straight line. I wasn't allowed to drift inside. I wasn't allowed to go and play in centre midfield or in the centre of attack. It was just literally chase up and down against the fullback. So it was against a direct opponent, and you have to get back and help your fullback. And it was just, I hated it. Whereas now, I think that the 4-4-2, the modern 4-4-2 system, because of the attacking fullbacks that we have in most teams now, and everyone's realised the importance, and there's a lot of players that are capable of playing this attacking fullback position, they're the width. So that means the wide midfield players can tuck inside. It means that then you've got four midfield players playing close together, whereas in the past you had two covering the whole width of the pitch. You know, you had your wingers running up and down along the touchline, keeping their heels white, getting the chalk dust on their heels, as coaches used to tell you, which was to make the pitch as wide as possible. But it left two blokes in midfield who were expected to defend and score goals, do box-to-box runs for 90 minutes. But it worked because the other two in midfield they were playing against were doing the same. So it took a while. In my career, we never had, you know, new outnumbering people in midfield, three against two. Or it came in when I was coaching. But in my playing career, it was just 4-4-2. Two wide midfielders, two midfielders expected to be Brian Robson, you know, banging up and down for 90 minutes, still getting goals, clearing it in the other penalty area when you have to defend. And basically, they were just playing against each other in midfield, the two of them. You know, you were facing your opponent and it was up and down the pitch. Whereas now the tactics, the midfield is more narrow, and because they've got the width from the fullbacks, you might get a centre forward dropping off deep. I never did that. I think I liked to. I could have done that, but I was always, you know, playing off of the shoulder of the defender, looking to beat offside, looking to get on flick-ons, chasing channel balls and stuff like that. No one ever asked me to come and play deeper. If I ever played wide, no one said to me, play on the left because you're right-footed and dribble across with your right foot and look to play in off the centre forward. It was very, very sort of, it was all about fundamentals. You know, quite basic, to be honest. Whereas now, the 4-4-2 is, you know, you can play a diamond in midfield and you still have your attacking fullbacks. You still have two up front. So it's you can have two up front with one dropping off, one staying up you know, up the top end of the pitch. So there's loads of variations. And I'm glad. I that's one of the things I embrace about La Liga. It's not always been the case. There was a case where everybody copied Pep in Barcelona. So everyone was playing 4-3-3 for a while. But now we get different variations, and it lends itself to, I think, an entertaining league. And the games haven't, the biggest game so far has clearly been Real Madrid, Real Sociedad, because Real Madrid are in it. And then, you know, we've got Barcelona, Atletico, and Sevilla to look forward to in the next few weeks. So I think it's looking promising.
Right, let's crack on with the other games. On the subject of what you were just talking about, Getafe 1, Osasuna 0. And another veteran striker, Jaime Mata, with a goal.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really important win for Getafe because they suffered at the end of last season. I think they've made some decent signings. They've kept important people at the club, the manager being one of them, of course, Gené, Cucurella, people like that. I can't believe no one came in for Aaron Barry and Maximovic in midfield. So pleasing for Getafe that they're still there. And they needed a win. You know, they were struggling, as I said, at the end of last season, lacking confidence. I believe they lost 6-0 to Real Madrid in a friendly last week as well. So it was crucial they got a win. They just about got it with the single goal, but they fully deserved it. They Osasuna had a bright start, but then Getafe, you know, gradually wore them down, and you know, I think they deserved a win in the end, and a little bit of confidence from their first win. Should hold me in good stead, and I expect them to go on and have a decent season again now.
Right then, on the subject of not having a decent season, Celta Vigo 2, Valencia 1. So once again, I think there's a case that Valencia involved in the most entertaining game of the weekend, but they were on the wrong side of it. A couple of goals for Iago Aspas, And then the youngest scorer, Terry, I've been looking at it, the only under 26-year-old who scored in that league is Maxi Gomez. Right? Yeah, so good goals again this weekend. And Celta hit the woodwork a couple of times, had plenty of chances to have won it by more. And I suppose this is more of what we expected, wasn't it? A literal on-the-pitch squabbling for Valencia that continues to look like a club in crisis.
Yeah, it really is a tough job for Javi Garcia. You look at them and you're thinking, I think we can see where the deficiencies are. They lack numbers as well. And there was one player the week before, Juras Rasic, who I thought looked promising. I think he had to pull out he had a toothache, dental problem before the game. So that made them even weaker in midfield because I thought he was going to get an opportunity. So it meant the likes of Yunus Musa and Vicente Izquierdo. There was no options at the back other than Paulista and Diakabi. It's going to be tough for Valencia. Maxi Gomez has started the season in really good form. That was a fantastic goal. I mean, it really was a great strike. But Aspas was the key player in this game. And Nolito, we can chuck another old one in as well. You know, Nolito's, we joked about him last year, how he ended up back at Celta. But at 33, the same age as Aspas, those two, you know, really looked sharp. And Nolito was a provider for the first goal, but Aspas with, you know, a great finish and then a great free kick, which was, it's hard to pin the blame on the goalkeeper, but it's a, just give credit to Aspas. It was a good strike. If he's scoring goals, then Celta have a chance and are doing much better than they have done, you know, last season in particular. So, no, Celta looks solid. Got players that can make a difference at the top end of the pitch. But for Valencia, I really do think it's going to be a struggle unless they bring some new players in.
Yeah, there's not an awful lot of sign of any positive movement, is there, with Valencia? But you never know. Right, let's crack on. Two promoted teams, Huesca 0, Cadiz 2. Quite a significant result, isn't it? It's the kind of game that you really got to win as a newly promoted club because there aren't many easy points around. And Alvaro Negredo, continuing the theme, Terry, of old veterans banging in the goals. He got one. Jorge Pombo, a child of 26. The goalkeeper is 41.
Alberto Cifuentes, it's his La Liga debut. It's a great story. I mean, he's 41. And he, do you know what? He was decent. He made a great save at the end, but it didn't matter anyway. There was a VAR look at to see whether a shot from Pedro Mosquera crossed the line. I think it had, but I think there was an offside involved as well. So it was disallowed. And the goal wasn't allowed. And therefore, the save wasn't counted. But it was a really good save. Down low to, he just, you know, got across from pretty close range, made an excellent save. He looked commanding. He looked assured. He looked experienced at the age of 41. But that's his first game in La Liga. It's a brilliant story. And it had to be that he was going to keep a clean sheet on his La Liga debut at 41. But Huesca had 70% possession and no attempts on target. And they didn't overdo the possession either. It wasn't defensive possession, you know, like the Betis we saw, you know, and under Kike Setién. It wasn't that. It was all in the attacking half, but they just never came up with anything different to break down Cadiz, and Cadiz were happy to do that. Got the lead from Negredo with a goalkeeping error. Mendes Fernandez, terrible mistake. Parries a cross, harmless cross as well, pretty low. Well, actually, he hits the ground, doesn't he? He dives on it, spills it. Negredo snaps up the rebound. And then there was, you know, just thought that there was another chance for a counter-attack. And that's what happened with Jorge Pombo late in the game getting a goal. So, massive win for Cadiz, because I think I'm not so sure they've got the quality to survive. Before the game, I thought Huesca would win. I thought Huesca would survive as well. But looking at their creative output at the weekend, that's where they're lacking. The team got younger. A few substitutes came on and looked a bit sharper as well, if I'm being honest, when the younger players came on. So perhaps Michel, the Huesca manager, might be going down that road of, you know, perhaps realising that the team that got them up might need refreshing with some younger players.
Yeah, they're overrated, these young players, Terry, you know.
Well, we haven't got the Standard, yet, have we? The quickest player in the Liga.
Well, let's do him, shall we? Let's do table topping Granada, who beat Alaves by 2-1 and won. I mean, it was just a long ball over the top, wasn't it? And lightning fast, 35-year-old Roberto Soldado just out sprinted. It was it Rodrigo Elie who he was?
Yes.
He was up against, and it just sprinted from virtually his own half to the other penalty area, scored.
Yeah, it was Darwin Machis who was in the left back position, chasing back, tackling back. A Alaves player tried to cross it. It got blocked. And Darwin Machis, literally from about 5 yards from his own byline, just hits a good old-fashioned channel ball. Soldado can't be offside because he's 10 yards inside his own half. Rodrigo Elie is the only player back for Alaves. So it was ludicrous defending. There was no cover. No one helping him out. And he had a 2-yard start on Soldado. And Soldado not only breezed past him, we have to give him credit. He only has one touch to set himself up before he finishes it. And the first touch he has cuts across from Rodrigo Elie. He has to avoid making any challenge because he's going to foul him and penalty and red card. So Rodrigo Elie is beating all ends up. And then he has the ability, which we know with Soldado in terms of finishing, to curl it across the goalkeeper into the far post. I had to rewind it and look because, that can't be Soldado. I think it was 34 kilometres an hour, which is a rapid, and it's made big news. I mean, and rightly so. I mean, he's 35 now. On that evidence, I've never seen him look quicker. I mean, we know his strengths and weaknesses over the years, but making a half-pitch run to outstrip a defender who was almost 10 years younger, was a fantastic goal from Soldado. And it tops off a fantastic week. He scored in the week in the win in Albania as well. It's been a fantastic week for Granada. 2 wins in the league, the win in the Europa League. They looked at a beaten team at the weekend. I have to be honest, I thought Alaves were unlucky, particularly in the second half. Granada tired. They had to dig deep. They had to do some last-ditch defending with the likes of Vallejo and Domingos Duarte. The full-backs weren't as attacking because they're already in the first week of the season. They're knackered. And, you know, for them to dig deep and then to get the winner towards the end of the game with Darwin Machis with a bit of a scramble goal. Poor defending from Alaves on that occasion again. The poor defending cost Alaves in this game. It was sometimes you just have to dig deep, stick in there as long as you can and hope something goes your way. And for Granada, 3 games in a week, 3 wins in a week, fantastic achievement.
Oh yeah, a much under-analysed aspect of football is just finding a way through the 90 minutes, isn't it? It's not the kind of thing that anyone writes a book about, that is it? Or, you know, gives a lot of analysis too, but, you know, just literally just hanging in there, showing the strength of character, riding your luck every now and again and coming through. It matters, doesn't it? Because this could be a big result come the end of the season, couldn't it? Because, Granada now are top at the moment, just joking that you say that, because I've only had 2 games, some teams have had no games, but... these teams could be pretty close to each other come the end of the season. Hossolu scored a really good free kick, didn't he? And Machis got the winner for Granada. So level top, Terry, is Real Betis, 2-0 win against Valladolid. A handball. So tell us about the handball, the new harsher handball interpretation going around. Is that fair? That led to the Fekir penalty and then a brilliant goal to wrap it up for Betis.
Yeah, it is the harsh handball offence. Oscar Plano is the player that bounces up, rebounds and bangs him on the arm and nothing at all he could do about it. But Betis were on fire for the first 25 minutes of the game. You're looking at it and you're thinking, I felt for Valladolid. They're against on one of those days where a team starts off really well. They've suddenly got some confidence. Certainly Matt Pellegrini's had an immediate impact on some of the players there. And of course, the win in the first week in the circumstances with the last minute goal I get from Teo gave them confidence, which they were lacking. They've been lacking all last season. But now they look to have genuine belief. And as I said, for that first 20 minutes, they were brilliant. Absolutely superb. Great to watch. You felt that for Valladolid that they were going to be on the end of a good hiding. And then it suddenly kicked in. No, this is Sergio's Valladolid. Good characters, good spirit. Well organised, well coached, don't concede many goals week in, week out. And they, likewise, I talked about Granada digging in to get the win. Valladolid dug in not to get thrashed. and they did it really well. And in the second half, Betis weren't hanging on, but it was nowhere near as comfortable as that first 20 minutes. So I would imagine Sergio has gone away from that game relatively happy, because sometimes you have to hold your hands up. The second goal for Betis, the first one's a penalty. The second one is an outstanding volley from Carvalho, who it looks to be getting back to his best as well. Fit Carvalho and alongside Guido in midfield makes Betis a whole different, completely different team. So if they can keep him fit and healthy, then they're a better team. It's like a new player. He only played 11 games last season. So you're looking at it and you're thinking, well, you know, Betis are really look good this season, which they did throughout the game. But the game certainly got harder for them, because credit to Valladolid, they hung it in there. They didn't go under. This could easily have been a 5-0. It could have been one of those comfortably. It could have been a thrashing. But that's what's held them in good stead the last couple of seasons. Good character, good personality. As I said, they know their jobs. They stuck to the task and made it a competitive match in the end. But for the first 20 minutes, Betis were brilliant to watch. Fekir was brilliant. Joaquin was brilliant. Canales. The only one that's lacking a little bit is Iglesias. And out of the blue, I did read about it before the game, Antonio Sanabria is back, coming off the bench.
Yeah. Well,
so I think obviously is the type of player that Pellegrini is interested in getting back involved. And I think he's, a quality player. So I'm pleasantly surprised, pleasingly, to see him back. And it's going to be interesting to see how he does for Betis under Pellegrini now.
Right, we've got a whole host of transfer stories that we will discuss in the second part, but we've got one more game to do, which is the goalless game, Real Sociedad 0, Real Madrid. And Neil, got a few questions to ask you about this, Terry, but just give us your overall impression of the game first.
It wasn't great, I have to be honest. I think Real Sociedad are suffering with some important players missing, and maybe one or two playing that aren't at the level yet in terms of fitness that they want to be. But I thought that they were hard to break down, but just lacked that normal attacking intent that we see from them. Lots of tidy football from both teams, but no real sort of nothing damaging in terms of for the defences either end of the pitch. So it was a disappointing game, not just the scoreline, but I thought in terms of attempts on goal and stuff like that, we probably will expect him more.
Why have strikers on the bench and not use them in a goalless draw, particularly Luka Jovic?
Yeah, and Borja Mayoral is another player that suddenly, pitched up back at Real Madrid and on the bench. Two obvious players that you could bring on. Zidane claims he didn't want to change the tactics. I don't want to question Zidane. I mean, he's manager of Real Madrid. He's won the league. He's won Champions Leagues. So I don't want to come on and jump on his back after one game away from home. In context, in the season, a 0-0 draw away from Real Sociedad, if you challenge him for the title as Real Madrid will be, isn't the worst result in the world. I think we all believe Real Sociedad are more than decent. So perhaps he was looking at it that way. First league game, first competitive game, didn't want to get beat. And, was quite content just to keep it scoreless. But I think the last 20 minutes of the game, that was the problem. Neither team really went all out for the win. So hence the reason he didn't bring too many attacking players on, any more strikers, because he didn't want to risk, losing the goal. Anyway, Ramos goes up front for the last 10 minutes anyway.
Right, so James and Gareth Bale are out. The Premier League has come in a way to Real Madrid's rescue there, hasn't it? And taking them off, most of the wage bill away from Real Madrid. So do they desperately need to go and spend that money before October the 5th? Obviously, Odegaard is back. He played, started the game at the weekend. But are they short for the season?
I genuinely believe, in terms of the quality we associate with Real Madrid, yes, I have to be honest. I know they won the league last season, but they were short of it in the Champions League. And when I look at the front line there, I know there was no Hazard and no Asensio. They're the two big misses at the moment. But when you look at the front three of Real Madrid, it doesn't bear any resemblance to what we've known in the past. I mean, you're talking, Benzema, Bale, Ronaldo. It's when you look at Benzema, Vinicius and Rodrigo, it's not going to scare teams. It may well be enough to win the league, But again, I think they're going to be coming up short in terms of quality up front to challenge in the Champions League. Would they spend the money now? No. I think they're saving it for Mbappe for the following season. So I think Zidane at the moment has no other choice but to go with the younger players. Although, you know, he clearly has a choice when it comes to... He doesn't want to play two strikers. So Benzema will always get the pick. And then the players you're talking about, Jovic and Mayoral, they're just going to be, you know, sat the bench. Mariano Diaz is another one. So there are three centre forwards there now. They're all looking at each other thinking, none of us are going to get a game. None of them know who number two is, number three and number four. And yet there's you know, an abundance of players that can play in the wide positions. But Zidane rarely ever chooses to rest Benzema or play someone alongside him. So in a 0-0, you'd probably think in the last 10, 15 minutes it was worth a gamble from Zidane, but he didn't want to take that risk. As I say, both managers were happy with a draw in the end.
So, I mean, they've been linked with Cavani, haven't they? But you've got to wonder, is there any point in them? Because you think, well, could they get someone on loan on a short-term deal or something if they're waiting for Mbappe? But there doesn't seem to be a lot of point if he's not going to play them. Because, you know, a good young player, a striker available on loan, I'd say Luka Jovic, but they've got him and he doesn't play him.
Exactly. And yeah, we've seen enough from Mayoral to know that he could do a job for Real Madrid. It's going to be far easier for him to play for Real Madrid than it is for Levante, you know, where, you know, you're not dominating teams week in, week out. Real Madrid are going to dominate teams most majority of the season. If you're a tidy striker, which he is, then you'll get more chances, more opportunities and goal. And you're playing on, you know, being provided, you know, by better players. So even he would do a good job as backup, but there is no backup. No one's ever needed. If Benzema gets injured, then it's going to be an issue. Because it's going to take everyone out, those players, to, you know, a while to get match fit, a while to be trusted. You can see if Benzema gets injured, one week it'll be Jovic, he'll be brought off after an hour, then Mayoral will go on. The next week Mayoral will start, he'll get brought off after an hour, and Mariano Diaz will go on. And none of them will know where they stand. None of them will have any confidence because they all know they're filling in for Benzema till he comes back. So I think that it was an issue last year because he had such a great season, Benzema. He carried them through. And then after lockdown, Ramos contributed with half a dozen goals. But goal scoring is going to be a problem. It was quite ironic that we were talking about Bale and James leaving. I can't imagine how they still wouldn't, you know, be an asset to Real Madrid. When you see, you know, James in particular, he's nowhere near fit. Yet, you know, pulling strings in midfield, creating goals, scoring goals, and looking fantastic. And it was quite ironic. The week he leaves, Zidane actually plays Odegaard in that position, which would have suited James. You know, no Casemiro, so he played Modric and Kroos as a double pivot, and then Odegaard was further ahead of them, almost playing as a number 10. So it was quite ironic to see James leave when he's never hardly played that position for Real Madrid in, you know, since he's been at the club. So, yeah, and then you see the subs that do come on. You know, we saw Marvin Olawale. There was another youngster that came on as well, and towards the end of the game, that bench for Real Madrid, the front line of Real Madrid, recently has scared teams, but at the moment it's not. So it'd be interesting to see what, if anything, happens in the remaining of the transfer window.
Right, let's take a quick break and we'll come back and talk about the big transfers that are knocking around and that might happen in La Liga. Welcome back to La Liga Weekly. Well, the big speculation is that Luis Suarez is on his way. I mean, we can't confirm this at the moment, and these stories do knock around, and they're often not accurate. But so the story runs, Terry, that Alvaro Morata goes to Juventus and that Atletico replace him with Luis Suarez. Now, I would love, as I said at the beginning, to see Luis Suarez and Diego Costa up front, a pair of utter shithouses together in the front line for Atleti, as it should be. But, I mean, the story runs that Costa would have to leave, so we might not see them together. So what do you want to happen? What do you think will happen?
Well, I'd love to see that. I'd love to see the pair of them. Even the competition for the place in the team. They'd be kicking lumps out of each other in training, wouldn't they? And Costa does need a kick out the backside. No doubt about that. So Morata clearly is on his way to Juventus. The situation with Suarez, it looks like he's rescinding his contract, the mutual agreement. Then apparently he's going to be able, I would hope, allowed to go to any club that he chooses. Because I've read reports and people have said that Barcelona are making stipulations there's certain clubs he can't go to, but that's a nonsense. If he's going to, you know, mutually rescind the contract, then he should be free to go wherever he wants. And he's perfect fit, isn't he, for Atletico Madrid, for Simeone, a player with shouldn't have to prove anything, but will have the fire in his belly to prove Barcelona wrong, playing in the same league as them, and playing for a team now that relishes being the underdog and relishes, you know, being the street fighting team. So playing for Simeone, Suarez, I think it's a perfect fit. I'd be surprised if Morata's going. I'd be surprised if Costa went as well to bring in Suarez.
Yeah. So you think that's enough money cleared?
Yeah. And I'm sure there's other players. You know, Thomas Lemar, you've barely seen. They brought in Carrasco, so they could, I'm not saying easily move Thomas Lemar on, but he is one of those players that has had the impact that we all hoped and Atletico hoped. So there's other players there that could move on. I hope they keep Thomas Partey. I think he's important to whatever they want to do this season. So I think that, you know, if Morata does go, it moves one centre forward out, another one can come in, similar salaries and stuff like that. So, you know, I would love to see that. You joked about Raul Garcia as well. I mean, that's clearly not going to happen. But you know, people know, you know, the type of personalities that Simeone wants in his team. And if he gets Suarez, that would be unbelievable.
Well, they're the ones he's comfortable with, I think, isn't it? What we've seen in the last few years of Simeone is him sort of looking around for whether there is a new Atleti that suits the bigger stadium, the European stage and all of that. I've always got the impression that he was happy and content with a street fighting team, which is where, you know, they came from and they upset the whole of La Liga. Just a couple of questions then, Terry. So you said that Barcelona are sort of obliged to let him go anywhere, but I must say, if I was Barcelona and I'm sort of doing Suarez a favour in terms of paying off some of his money, giving him some kind of settlement, I would be thinking, but not if you're going to Atletico. I'll settle your wages, we'll come to some arrangement if you go to Juve or if you go to, you know, wherever, Spurs, wherever, but not if you're going to Atletico, because imagine from Bartomeu's point of view, imagine Barcelona lose 2-0 and Luis Suarez scores two goals.
I will. It's nailed on. I mean, it's David Villa, isn't it? David Villa leaving and going to Atletico Madrid. Simeone loves that. And he knows the right personality with someone who's got a point to prove. And Suarez shouldn't, but he will. And he knows the personality of Suarez. Suarez is going to be all out to do that. I think the problem here, John, is that, you know, Barcelona want to move Suarez on. He didn't ask for a transfer.
Yeah.
And the way they're going to do it is to mutually rescind the contract. I don't think you can't have everything. You can't say, you know, otherwise Suarez would just stay at Barcelona. Kiki's heels there. So there has to be an agreement that suits all parties. Then you can't, I don't feel you can. It's different if they were selling him. I don't think there's going to be a fee involved. It'd be different if they were selling him. They've got every right. He's under contract to decide, you know, who he goes to, where he goes and how much for. But if you want to speak, you know, do a deal with someone that you don't want to keep at the club, you want to do a deal on their salary, the remaining year of their contract, you can't then have the right then to decide where they are allowed to go and not.
So if
go.
You are...
So I think once you get it in place, if he rescinds the contract, mutually agreed, I don't think there can be any clauses where Barcelona say, but you can't go there.
So if you are Barcelona's... If you, as should be the case, if you were the sporting director of Barcelona, would you let him go? Or would you say, no, listen, you can stay and play 5 games for us or 10 games for us this season. I'll sell you to China or England or Italy, but I'm not giving you away for free to Atletico.
Yeah, I think that in an ideal world, that would be certainly would be the case. But Barcelona clearly do need to raise some revenue from somewhere. We're seeing with the players that are moving out already. So it's a must for them that they move Suarez on because he's costing too much to do what Gareth Bale's done for a year. It would be disruptive for any manager, and at the moment it's Koeman, to have Suarez, you know, not involved in training, not involved in the games, sitting in the stand every match. So that's what Barcelona want. They want to move him on, and he's got every right to pursue a career for whoever wants him to. And there's big clubs that are interested, rightly so. He's Barcelona's third highest ever goal scorer in six seasons. So there's still life in him yet, and I just felt that him and Messi, with the way that Barcelona play and the other old veterans in the team, it was probably one or two veterans too many. But I don't think that's going to be an issue at Atletico, where they just need someone like Suarez, better Diego Costa, to get on the end of the chances that they create. And he still does his fair share of closing down. It's a different way of closing down, though, and pressing Atletico than it is at Barcelona. It's the whole team doing it. So whereas at Barcelona, it was dribs and drabs. One doing it, two doing it, half the team not doing it and stuff like that. So I think a move to Atletico would suit him absolutely perfect.
So one more in this whole conundrum then is, I just want to ask you about Alvaro Morata, Terry. What? How has he, given his goal-scoring record, how has he had the clubs that he's had for the transfer fees that he's had? As I say, you look at Jaime Mata's record, it's similar. I know you'd say, well, some of those are lower division, but some of those, they're also playing for worse teams. And so, if you're playing for those clubs that Morata's played for, you would expect to be scoring a lot of goals.
Well, he keeps returning, doesn't he, to play connections?
Yeah.
Who see the attraction. And yet,
so what is it?
The attraction is, I think he did well at Juventus, because when he came back to, Spanish football and Chelsea, there was an obvious reason why, because he'd done well in Serie A. So that's the reason why Juventus still, want him now. And Pirlo was his teammate. So he saw it. The attraction then was a young player, wasn't it? With all the attributes you look for in terms of a centre forward. He was hungry, determined, mobile, strong, aggressive, quick. The obvious attributes, they are there with Morata. But over the years, he's just lost that hunger and that desire. And some people do, when you get comfortable and you don't feel you have a point to prove, you feel you've made it, you've earned your money, and you're drifting through. And that's what he's been doing for the last four seasons, I would say.
Is that what you think? Because I sometimes think he lacks confidence, despite having been signed by all those great coaches and great clubs.
Yeah, no, I thought there was a period with Morata where I thought that the first spell at Real Madrid, when he was one of those backup players, do you remember that B team that were playing in La Liga, and he was involved in that. I think that was then. I thought, this player's the real deal. But I just don't see it. Whenever I see him now, I see him getting knocked about by centre backs, always complaining he's injured. He doesn't look as fast as he used to, because I think that determination is lacking. And he when he joined Atletico, you thought if he's got that hunger and he's got that desire, he's the ideal striker for them. And yet it's worked out to a degree in the fact he was their top scorer last season. But for me, he hasn't been convincing. But obviously, all the moves he gets are linked, to former managers, former clubs that he's played for. Pirlo is a teammate. He's going back to Juventus. So it kind of, hopefully for his sake, Pirlo can get him playing better on a regular basis. Perhaps the reason is what you're suggesting, that he just lacks that oomph, doesn't he, to be a killer for Atletico. Mm.
Yeah. I thought, Simeone was probably the place to go to learn that. But if you haven't got it, he maybe doesn't. He lacks faith in that kind of player. I mean, he was all right last season, wasn't he? He got 16 La Liga goals. It's not disastrous, is it, by any stretch of the imagination? I just, not necessarily that level for that club. Just on the Barcelona fullbacks, Terry, before we wrap up, Nelson Semedo, it would seem, is off to play for Wolves. And they've been linked with Sergino Dest, who is an American international with Ajax. with Emerson and with Max Ahrens. So, what do you think?
Well, the Emerson one's an obvious one, isn't it? They already own 50% of him, but they can't negotiate with Betis until the end of the season, allegedly. I think there's already a clause there that how much they have to buy him back for. I think it's 9 million. That's the obvious one for me, because he's playing in La Liga. He looks everything you want from a right back for Barcelona. We'll be talking about in the first part of the podcast with the athletic, energetic fullbacks that push up and down the flank for 90 minutes. That's what he does, and he does it really well. So I think they're going to need someone now. I mean, they can't go into the season with just Sergio Roberto, because I'm still not convinced he's a right back against top class opposition where you have to defend. And I think he's an excellent midfield player, but they've got away with it they haven't got away with it. They've carried that issue of the right back position for far too long. I thought Semedo was making progress, but no one's really had genuine belief in him, have they? None of the managers that he's worked under. So it's never a surprise when he's substituted and Roberto goes back in from midfield to right back, or Sergio Roberto comes on and takes his place, and we dress it up with, oh, it's a different type of right back. You know, Sergio Roberto isn't a right back. He's okay when you're on top, you've got possession, and you weren't a good footballer playing in the attacking half of the pitch. Good at passing, but he hasn't got that pace to get back. If you're a top-class winger, wide left player in the Champions League, you would embrace playing against Sergio Roberto at right back, that's for sure.
Well, and I suppose if you're right, if Emerson is the ultimate answer, sort of explain why there was talk of a loan deal for Max Ahrens. It just seems odd, doesn't it? Barcelona being linked with a Norwich City player on loan. It's kind of move that you would have considered below. I mean, it's a good player, Max Ahrens, but
next room, you know, they'd be signing strikers from Leganés.
Yes. And on that bombshell, we'll leave it. Barcelona, Terry, are going to play football next week, interestingly. We should look forward to that, shouldn't we?
I am, because it's a new manager, and it does look like he's coming and really changing things up. I'm interested to see the extent. Dembele should be back fit as well. Trincão, I think his name is.
Yes.
Looks to be really good. Coutinho back. It's going to be a much different Barcelona. Good, bad, indifferent. No idea. But it's certainly going to be different and something to look forward to in next week's game. I think they've got some tough games coming up as well. Right, first two or three games are tough for Barcelona.
And so we will be back. All of those games, of course, coming up as La Liga really sort of hopefully catches light next weekend, and a bit more news on those transfers as to see what actually happens as well. All of that in the next edition of La Liga Weekly. We'll see you for that. Bye-bye.